Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
46% of Americans expect to leave behind financial obligations when they pass away. So it's crucial to make sure your family is financially protected. Policy Genius helps you find the right life insurance coverage by comparing options from America's top insurers with help from licensed, award-winning agents. Secure your financial future with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get free life insurance quotes in just a few clicks. That's policygenius.com.
You ever get that feeling? The walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.
Welcome back to the Gear Talk. Jordan here. I've got Yanni with me. And, dude, what's been happening lately?
Hound hunting.
Still?
That's where I'm at. Oh, yeah. A little bit of skiing, but mostly hound hunting, which, if you haven't been following along, that basically consists of me driving around both of my truck and snowmobile and hiking around in snowy conditions and looking for, but not finding any lion or bobcat tracks. That's what happens 9 out of 10 times I go out. So I feel like I'm coming up on another track, because I feel like I'm again looking at like a 2 week, maybe 3 week dry stretch. That's not quite true. I've found a couple tom tracks in the last 2 weeks, but both times I feel like I've been at least a day, maybe too late. And you know, if you find that track in the dark in the morning and you have all day, maybe you could cut loose on it and end up somewhere with a cat. But a lot of times I have until like noon, one. And so I feel like I need to find something that looks like it's from the day before.
Gotcha. I have yet to be on a cat hunt.
Yep.
Maybe soon.
Oh, well, you're going to have to drive over to Old Montana sometime. You can come drive around with me, look for tracks.
Give it a rip, yeah. Sweet. So we're going to talk about my bear hunting gear list for early June that is coming up. And we're going to do it a little different. Instead of us both having our gear list and going back and forth on what we're going to take with us, we're just going to go through mine. And I hope you don't like tear it apart, but you're going to challenge some of the things a little bit.
Yeah, I just want to, I think we kind of chose to do this format because we can just concentrate on Jordan's list. And I can just ask you questions of like, oh, why'd you choose that? Because honestly, our gear lists probably aren't going to be that different.
Yeah.
But I think it's, when I see a gear list, if I see one just printed somewhere, I often have questions about it and want to ask that person like, oh, why'd you choose that instead of that? Because I've always heard that you want to carry this when you're bear hunting, you know? So
yeah,
we'll give it a shot and see how it goes. Maybe next year we could post our gear lists, or we could even do it this year for other hunts. And then folks could ask questions about those gear lists, and we could answer that in an upcoming episode.
It's a good idea. We've had quite a few requests, actually, for just a printed gear list to give people.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
It's a good idea.
And I've got them, man. I've been making gear lists now for probably dang near 2 decades. I was making gear lists when I was a guide that I would send to clients. You're a guide outfitter. You know, they... some people have still not gotten the memo about how you really shouldn't bring cotton on a Western hunt.
Yeah. Do you go full Excel spreadsheet with like graphs and stuff?
Graphs, no. But I mean, I go Excel spreadsheet for sure.
Yeah.
And yeah, I like to make it look all pretty and have, you know, some weights in there. I published one a couple years ago on the Meat Eater. I think if you type in like Yanni's Colorado sheep hunt, it would come up. I published that one and we did a little article around it. And that was on an Excel spreadsheet.
Cool. Yeah.
This one I'm looking at now, Jordan did not send me an Excel spreadsheet.
Not an Excel,
it's just
no.
in a Word doc format.
Yep, it is. I've gone the Excel route before. I just trying to be speedy on this one, I guess. I don't know.
Sure. The key is, I think, like dating them and then keeping them around so that you can reference them and, you know, look back and think about things that have changed. And I don't know if I mentioned this, but I've been saying it lately about these gear lists. A lot of them are so similar. Like this list, you could change a couple things probably and take it and go, you know, archery elk hunting. Change your weapon and probably wouldn't have some orange, whatever. You know what I mean? You'd be really close. But I feel like the lists that I have going now are these like smaller lists that don't, they have like 10 or less items that are very specific, right? Like I don't need to know that I'm taking a tent and I'm taking a sleeping bag, right? That's just like, it's always going to come with me.
Yep.
But like, speaking of a bear hunt, I've realized that there's a lot of downtime in that having a book on a bear hunt, I feel like more than any other hunt, maybe a moose hunt would be similar. But like a book, I feel like it's crucial on a bear hunt.
I did not put a book in here.
I saw that. Yeah. You're going to hunt harder than me.
Oh, I don't know about that.
All right. So the first thing on Jordan's 2023 bear hunting gear list was for early June. When I saw it, I was like, my first question was in my head was, okay, is this for day hunting? Are you backpacking? And then tell me, obviously, you don't know what the conditions are going to be like, but what sort of weather conditions are you expecting going into this hunt?
Yeah, so we were expecting, I would expect anyways, lows in like the low 30s, high 20s is what I'm thinking in like mornings, and then highs of 50 typically, but man, early June in the mountains, it could snow easy. We could have...
And you know, a high of 50 is not, to me, that's not warm.
No, that's not that warm. Especially you get a breeze going, you get kind of some overcast, like misty air type stuff. Like,
oh yeah.
And that's the time of year for it. You know, that spring, like everything is just like wet. Even if it's not raining, it's just like seems to be kind of wet.
Yeah. It never seems like you go on a dry, spring bear hunt.
No, I don't think you do. So yeah, we're going to be staying in a cabin, which is going to be kind of nice. We got a group of people, so we've got it. We did a cabin this year instead of trying to do like a wall tent or a backpack hunt. Some of the reason this is going to be, so this is an Idaho hunt, like a central-ish Idaho hunt. It's going to be a new area for me as far as bear hunting goes. And I feel like I'm going to want to travel more, like put more miles on the vehicle and also my boots as far as like in the mornings, I want to be more mobile. I haven't bear hunted like a ton, but I have shot one and I've filmed a few, and all the outfitters we've ever gone with, they're like, yeah, typically bear hunting's a little slow in the mornings, picks up in the afternoons. Mm-hmm. And so I was going to use that morning time to almost do like a little bit of scouting, glass a long ways away, and just cover some area and then figure out where I want to go sit for the afternoon, and then probably hike in, get on a good ridge where I can glass a lot and see a long ways and just sit there and glass and wait for them to come out and then make a move.
Yeah. What time do you like to be set up by? Like for your sit that's going to go all the way until dark.
Like one?
Yeah.
One, two, right in there.
That's been my, I'm no Joe bear hunter, but that's been my experience too. Some places it's like very, like, to the extreme where you're like, don't even go out and until just be in position for the last 60 minutes of the day. And all of a sudden there's just bears everywhere. But in the mountains, I mean, you still have a chance of catching them midday and catching them in the morning. But yeah, it sure seems like that last 2-3 hours that's when you really want to be paying attention and pouring the coals to it.
Yeah, we've even, I filmed a couple hunts where the guides don't even get you up until, you know, you don't even go out till 10 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
You just like kind of leisurely get up, have a nice breakfast, and then start going out and glassing and then be in one spot sitting where you think there's like the best spot for a bear to come out for, that last little bit. So that,
and it's not like it's going to hurt you being out all day.
No.
And looking, except that, you know, especially if you're coming into June, you're going in June, right?
Yep.
You're within a couple, 3 weeks of the summer solstice. I mean, you're looking at some long ass days. And on those kind of hunts, if you're pounding it and hiking an hour before daylight and then hiking it an hour after daylight, man, that's a long day and a short night, and you can just get worn out. So it's that thing where you have to balance, you know, and be trained up for it, but have to balance like, okay, how worn out do I want to be, you know, by how much effort I'm putting out, and balance that with like being on top of your game for prime time, you know, for those last 3 hours of the day. Because if you've just gone hard for 3 days, really for no, you know, well, I don't want to say for no reason, but again, you've worn yourself out, and then all of a sudden you're not like giving it 110% on the third day from, you know, 5 p.m. till 8 p.m., you might be missing out.
Yeah.
So let's start with optics. You have on your list SIG Zulu 9 11x45s.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have them stuffed in the FHF FOB bino harness.
Yep.
Which is super nice, super comfy. If you haven't checked that out, check it out. You got the SIG Oscar 8 80mm spotting scope. You're going to have that on top of a Slick 624 tripod with the Outdoorsman's pan head. Of course, you got the Outdoorsman's bino adapter for your tripod. And the all-in digiscoping setup for doing some digiscoping. Talk me through, like, I think we're on the same page with, you know, obviously tripod mounted optics for finding critters. But what do you use a scope more for finding the bears or more for judging bears?
More for judging bears. For me, they're hard things to judge if you want to shoot a nice one. And I think being able to zoom in tight and get a good look at their head and some of their bodily features, it's worth carrying the scope for me. And honestly, it's just hard for me to leave a spotting scope behind. Like, I just like being able to, you know, even deer or elk or whatever else you're seeing out there, just being able to look at them. I like doing that. But yeah, carrying the scope to judge them. And then, I mean, even some, you know, sometimes at long distances, it's nice just having the scope to glass around and pick out some things
just
if you're looking to
pan a distant hillside.
Yeah,
you know, some people do it. Jason Phelps does that a whole bunch, man. And I've tried it, and I just like closing that one eye like that and just looking through that single scope. I can't do it for more than 10 minutes, and I start to get a headache from squinting. Maybe I just need to toughen up and do it some more, but I don't know. Question I have for you. Tell me what pack you're using, and then tell me for all of this optics stuff, tripods, you know, spotting scopes, how are you carrying all that stuff on that pack or in that pack, I guess?
Yeah. So I've started to like test out a lot of backpacks, which has been really fun. So got a couple of, like Kafaros I can choose from. I've been running the new XOK 4 frame a little bit with some of their new bags, which has been nice. And then the Stone Glacier Crux frame has been super nice as well. Like, just fits my body really good. So I like to have packs, like, from any one of those companies, the bag size is going to be around 5,000 cubic inches for me. It's like, that's even like backpack status for a lot of people as far as how big that is. But it's like, we'll get down to the clothing list, but a lot of that stuff is like kind of bulky, and just being able to carry everything inside the bag is nice. So optics wise, like, I have my spotting scope inside the bag for the most part. And then I think my tripod's pretty hardy, so I just keep that strapped to the outside. One thing I wanted to bring up that I do, if I'm like walking down a ridge, like, you know, stopping and glassing a lot, or I think I want to look through my scope really quick, I'll leave my spotting scope on my tripod, like hooked up on my tripod head, and then I'll strap it to the back of my pack. So the tripod is like laying horizontal along the lid. And then it's all like hooked up, ready to rock. I just need to unclip it real quick, spread the legs out, and then I got my scope. So
that's it's something that I definitely mess around with a lot, and usually won't. Like, I'll have, like, especially in that, in those exo packs, I like that one vertical zipper on the outside that I'll put my spotter in, and then I'll have my tripod on in one of those just along the sides. It just seems like more often than not where your look at game is fleeting. Not because you might have even spooked it, but just because, you know, you spot them and the herd just happens to be going over the ridge, or it's like late morning and they happen to be going into the timber, and literally seconds count. Because if you get that thing out real quick and you put it on that bear as he's walking into the timber and you're like, holy shit, that looked like a big boar, your decision is made for the day. You're like, we're camping right here. Or you might move a little bit to get a better advantage or get within range or whatever. But, like, you got a plan. Where if you're fumbling around and you don't do it and you just looked at him through handheld, you know, tens, you're like, eh, I don't know. Was it good? Maybe. And then you know, you're kind of indecisive and you don't know. So I feel like, having like a super solid, you know, system for getting to your spotter quickly is important. All right. Sweet. So anything else you want to add about your optics setup?
I don't think so. That all in digiscoping case, we get questions about digiscoping like all the time. And that's a product. I think it hit the market last year. And man, as far as speediness to get your phone on your scope and like not have to mess with the alignment, there's not another one I found that is quicker than that thing.
No, 100% agree. I used, well, for a long time, I used before there was even such a thing as digiscope cases on iPhones. I had a point and shoot camera that had I would go and buy compatible filters for a different size lens, and filters that you could screw together, and we would knock out the glass, and you would take one side of it and basically glue it to a PVC pipe fitting that would fit over the eyepiece of your spotting scope, and then you would take the other threaded piece and glue that as centered as you could to a point and shoot camera. And then that way you could basically screw your little connector piece to the camera and then pop it onto the spotting scope. A bunch of us used to do that down in Arizona before it came out. But then since then I went to phone scope. And then last year, at least this is when I got them, I got a MagView.
Yep.
Use that on the caribou hunt that we did, and then shortly after got the All-In. It's spelled O-L-L-I-N, but they pronounce it All-In. And 100%, by far, you are telling the truth. That All-In, it just snaps on there. It uses a magnet, just like the MagView, but it's like perfectly centered every single time. I don't know exactly how they did that, how they worked those magnets to make it, but it is... There's no more like, oh, I'm kind of off left to right, or I'm kind of off up and down. I've got a vignette in the upper right-hand corner. You just put it on there and it is money. It is like, I'll just got, like, once you try it, you will never go back.
You'll never go back. No. Yeah. And that's why I wanted, why I wanted to talk about it. Cause it's certainly like, it's really worth a shot. And, yeah, I just think back to how many times I've thrown my phone or been messing with my phone, like trying to get on a deer or something.
Mm-hmm.
And, gosh, just been like, not only do you miss, you know, you're messing around with like trying to center that thing to make sure you get footage of him. Not only do you miss that, but you miss other times you could just have been looking at him with your eyes and getting a better feel for what they are. So, yeah, I just,
again, seconds matter, man. Just like being ready with your spotting scope. This is another time when seconds are crucial, and it's so good to get, my buddy Jay Scott always says this, like, don't worry about getting pictures because you don't know how it's going to be facing, what angle you're getting. Like, just run a video, get your hands off of it so that it's not shaky, and you can always, you know, move around through the video and stop it and pause it and take screenshots, but get as much video as you can because you're probably going to get different angles. You know, if it's a buck, hopefully you get to see, you know, one side and then the rear view and the front view. But yeah, video's where it's at with that.
Oh man,
but
yeah.
Good call. All right,
big time.
Water bottle. You had the Yeti
Yonder
water bottle on here. And I'm like, what's wrong with the Nalgene, Jordan?
Man, part of it is the Yonder bottle is new and had to try it. But one thing I like about it, as far as like, I always run a Nalgene pocket on my pack. They're like fit to the size of a, you know, regular Nalgene bottle. Sometimes with one hand, they're like a pain to get in and out. And that Yeti is like ever so slightly not as big around. And it's a little bit taller than a normal Nalgene. So much easier to get out in and out of there. And I still don't think it's like loose, sloppy, like it's going to fall out. But that's one thing I like. Another thing I like is with a Nalgene, it's like, you know, the wide mouth. Sometimes it's not hard to drink out of, but it's could be hard to drink out of sometimes. Like just the wide mouth, being able to drink out of it can be, you can just get water on you, whatever. I used to get a thing called a cap cap from Human Gear. It's called a cap cap. It's basically a cap that's the size of like the wide mouth Nalgene, screws on, and then on that cap there's another smaller cap with like just a smaller hole to drink out of, so just a little easier to drink out of. The Yeti like already has that built in, so once you figure the price, I think the Yeti is like $10 over what a normal Nalgene is. But once you get a normal Nalgene and then you buy that cap lid, you're basically the same price. Their cap is supposed to be leak proof. I haven't had any issues with that so far. I've had troubles with my Nalgenes leaking before, out of the lid. But as far as like the materials, from what I could find, they're using basically the same stuff. It's like a BPA free plastic.
But you're also carrying a Hydropack 3-liter water cell.
Yeah, the Yeti is only a liter. So if I'm going to go, you know, up for the day, I'd like to carry more than a liter of water with me. So that Hydropack, basically, it's just a small little water bladder. Like in there, it's only 3 liters. It just rolls up to basically nothing if you're not using it. And then you get to a stream or something, you can fill it up, fill your water bottle from that, and then Steripen it and roll. So
you're gonna carry a Steripen too, just in case you got to refill out of a creek.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. You don't know what kind of situation you're gonna get yourself in the afternoon.
Never do.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth. Hey everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right, join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's gonna be there, Phil the engineer's gonna be there. Meat Eater Live headed back out. Now when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.
Okay, you got on your list a NW, which I'm guessing is Northwest Retention.
Yeah.
Northwest Retention chest holder with a SIG P365 XL and 9mm.
Yeah.
Are you hunting Grizz country? Why are you carrying a pistol?
Not hunting Grizz country, man. A lot of it is like, for one, sometimes, a lot of the time, I'll have my cross folded up on my pack if I'm walking in. And oftentimes, you just get away from your rifle somehow. You know, you're up like glassing for all afternoon. You walk over the hill to like go glass another little area or whatever. You don't take your rifle with you, which like seems ridiculous as I talk about it. So there's that. And then a lot of times like I'm hunting by myself and it's more of a comfort thing, I think, for me than maybe so much as like a predator deal. But man, you never know. You see videos of those mountain lions chasing people.
Yeah, these days with the old Instagram, there seems to be a mountain lion creeping down on somebody just about once a week.
Yeah. If I was hunting Grizz country, I'd carry 10 mil. Like we did when we were in Alaska. 100%. Yeah.
All right, rifle. You're going Sig Sauer Cross and 6.5 Creedmoor.
Yep.
And I own that rifle too. I haven't killed an animal with it yet. I've been packing it around. I like carrying it.
Yeah.
But you feel like 6.5 Creedmoor is all you need for a black bear?
I feel like it is. I think black bears, the other black bear that I've killed, I shot with a 7 mag. The vitals on a bear sit back a little bit further than like a deer and elk. So I don't feel like I'm going to really have to hug the shoulder and, or like want to try to punch through the shoulder. I just want to get lungs. So
yeah,
in that area of the body, I feel like it's pretty soft. There's like a lot of game and fish websites and such, like their minimums. What they recommend is like 1,000 foot-pounds energy for a bear at the target, and I'm good with that. Basically out to 500 yards. I think at 400 yards, I'm like 1,300 foot-pounds. So I feel like if I can keep 400 and in, get a good broadside shot, that I don't have any troubles. I won't have any troubles with that. And, good bullet. That Accubond is good bullet and has been a good bullet for me. I've killed a few deer with it. And, I feel pretty confident about it.
Oh, yeah. I love that 140 grain Nosler Accubond in the 6.5. I used to pack 200 grain Accubonds into a 300 Winchester short mag. And that was my elk killing gun for quite a few years. And always had great luck with the Accubond.
Yeah. Well, how do you feel on that Creedmoor?
Yeah. I know there's talk out there that people are saying it's not enough gun for certain critters and it's a little bit puny. You have to have your expectations set properly. You got to know your limitations. Like you just said, like, you know how many foot pounds you have at 400 yards. Sounds like you're going to, kill him as dead there, with that bullet as anything else. So
yeah,
I think it's plenty. I think I've only shot deer sized. Well, with the 6.5 Creedmoor, yes, but I've shot 3 giant cow elk with a 6.5 55 Swede, which is even a little bit slower than the 6.5 Creedmoor, but same bullets, same weight and bullets, and have had amazing results. 250 yards, giant cow elk takes 3 steps, tips over, and is dead. So, yeah, I think you'll be good. Depends, yeah. Like I said, it's expectations, man. Is it going to knock that bear off its feet? Probably not. If you're looking for that, yeah, you probably need to go to 300. Hit him with some more weight. But I think that, man, I sure like shooting these a little bit lighter calibers because they're just easier to shoot. I can, especially now running a silencer, I can stay in my scope and watch that bullet hit. So I'm going to be way better and way faster on a follow-up shot if needed. Like it.
Yeah.
All right. You're topping it with a Sig Whiskey 6, 3 to 18 scope. Any particular reason you picked that one?
Man, I used it on my sheep hunt last or 2 years ago, and I've used it like a bit since. And man, it's just like, it's a compact scope. It's 23 ounces. It has an exposed turret, which I like. I like being able to dial, and it has a more compact turret. Doesn't stick up as much as some other ones. So that's one reason I like it too. And it just has performed really well for me. Seems to be durable. The dialing is pretty positive. So yeah, that's why I got that one. I think, the 3 to 18, I really like that, that range of power for a scope. Like 3 power, you can really turn it down, like really widen your field of view up. And just, if you're in tight on something, or if you just need to find something, like just trying to acquire something, backing out, being able to back that far out is nice. And then the 18 is a sweet spot too. I think like that 18 to 20 power right in there has been a sweet spot for me. I grew up on 3 to 9s, and I just think you bump up that power a bit to like a 15 or a 20. you can just be so much more precise on your shot with a higher power. And you don't always have to use all the power, too. So that's something I like about
it. Well, no, and like we learned, maybe we haven't talked about this with anybody yet, but in the past, talking to the optics guys, you know, it's like anything at max, you know, power on a scope. It's just like redlining your car, right? Can it do that? Yes. Is it going to perform optimum? No. So if you have an 18 or 20 top end, then at 12 and 15, you've got just amazing, you know, clear clear picture. Everything's great. We're on a 3 to 9. Once you, you know, jam it all the way to 9, you're sort of at the upper end of its capabilities and you're starting to lose, you know, focus, light gathering capabilities. It's just not performing, you know, at its optimum. So
yeah,
there's a reason right there to, you know, even though you might never dial to 20, it's good to have that upper end there so that at 15, you know, you've got an amazing picture.
Yeah.
You're looking through.
Yeah, I really like it.
Short action precision 2-round holder. I've seen this thing on your rifles. Sticks to the side of your rifle. You stick 2 rounds in there. And I want you to explain why you run that.
More like a just in case. I need 2 rounds. Like if you lose a magazine or something, you can single feed those two. I can't imagine where. Yeah, I have a 5-round magazine. I can't imagine where I'd need more than 5 for anything. Mm-hmm. But a couple times coyote hunting, I have like not refilled my mag and I've had 2 and like shot a couple times and got another shot and been like, oh shit, and been able to pull around out of that and just single feed it. It's, I don't know. It's probably a little overkill. It kind of looks cool on the side of that thing, but, I don't know.
Well, I mean, here's a question. When you go on this day hunt for bears, how many cartridges are you carrying total?
I would probably just have a 5-round mag.
5 plus the 2 though on the side.
5 plus 2, yep.
Yeah, and nothing in your pack.
No.
Yeah, so you're going in probably 7. Yeah. And I think that like most of us I think usually fall in that 7 to 10 range of you know how many you're packing around with you. And yeah, it's like, where are you going to put those 2 rounds? You could put them in your pocket, but I hate having 2 or 3 rounds jangling around in my pocket.
Yeah.
It's annoying. It's noisy. It's making noise. You're not being stealth. So yeah, having a little slick spot like that. Like I've had those stock packs in the past that have it's like a pocket, but on the inside of the pocket, it's got the little ammo, sleeves. And, I like that setup too, and kind of for the same reason. You know, all your ammo's there. If you do run through your 5 rounds in your mag, then you know you can refill right there. You don't have to all of a sudden go, "Oh my gosh, where did I put those into my pack? What pocket are they in?"
Yeah, don't use them very often, but when you need them, you're really going to need them. Type of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You also had on your list FHF gun case strapped to the back of the pickup seats. Have you run that back there yet?
Yeah, dude, I like it a lot.
Loving it?
Yeah, I've got the really short one. I don't remember how long that one is, but it's the short one and it fits the cross perfect as long as you don't have like a can on it or something. Yeah, it's just something you really don't think about. I'm used to just, you know, like a cheap gun case, but if just the amount of things you can do with that FHF one is pretty nice. Having it on the back of your seats gets it off the floor. People can sit in the back seats. You don't have to worry about it so much. Yeah, it's been nice.
Yeah, that was my question because I haven't set up mine yet in the back of the truck, but is there still enough room where you could sit in the back seat and that thing's not going to be up in your grill?
Yeah. If you were super tall, I think that like your knees could hit it. I wouldn't. Suppose it depends how big your back seat is too.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a good product for sure.
All right, clothes.
Yeah, pretty standard for me. The Wick hoodie, the Wick boot top bottoms to match it, and then Corget Foundry pants, pretty standard. The Origin hoodie, the Catalyst jacket. One thing about the Catalyst jacket, some people for like backcountry scenarios don't believe in soft shells for some reason. In that early, like we were talking about, you don't really know what you're going to get for weather. A lot of times it's just kind of like dreary, cold, might be windy. Having that Catalyst jacket over the top of a fleece when you're like walking around on ridges, it can just be super comfortable. I just really like that setup. Then I'm going to be taking a jacket. We got told that we could tease it out a little bit. There's a new jacket that's basically combining a puffy jacket with a rain jacket that's going to be coming out. And I think that is like a perfect jacket for this kind of situation where you're going to be glassing a lot, sitting, you're going to be on a ridge. You for sure want to have a puffy jacket with you. More than likely, you're probably going to need a rain jacket. And with that setup, just having like a rain jacket, it doesn't matter if it's this one or just a rain jacket in general, it's windproof also. So even if it's not raining, if it's super windy, I like throwing a rain jacket on.
And so when you take this combo puffy rain gear, you're not taking rain gear and, or a rain jacket, and you're not taking any other puffy for insulation. Your insulation at that point is just gonna be that jacket and then your Origin hoodie, really.
It's going to be it. Yep.
All right. And what else you got on there?
I think I'm going to bring the Uncle Padre pants, the puffy pants. That's something that is kind of like a floating thing in my pack that I could just leave in the vehicle if it's tends to be like warmer in the afternoon. I could leave that for sure. Omen rain pants, man. Again, like even if it's not going to rain, a lot of times it's just wet wherever you're sitting. Being able to throw rain pants on and keep dry is like huge. Keeps the wind cut off you. That's great. I usually take a couple pairs of gloves with me. Catalyst gloves and then the heavier Alpine gloves. I like that combo. Or just having those two with me. Furnace beanie, just a regular ball cap. And then for boots, those crispy Brixtal Pro boots that they have 200 grams of insulation in them. And that's a pretty sweet spot for me. So it's kind of my clothing layout. And just like you were saying before, you could take this thing and go elk hunting with it. Like, there's not much that would change in that.
Right. Yeah, I think the only thing that, it might change, I don't know. If I was going backpacking, I don't know if I'd be any lighter or heavier. I got to look at my list, but.
Yeah,
I think you can go a little bit heavier on a day hunt, right? Because you know you're, going in, coming out, and it's not like you're gonna have to carry that stuff for days on end.
Yeah, I think maybe for like a backpack hunt, I might for multiple nights of backpack hunting, I might not take a Catalyst jacket. That's pretty much it, I think, for me.
All right, some smaller items, InReach Mini 2.
For sure.
Satellite communications, emergencies, your Petzl Arctic Core headlamp, Argali trekking poles, Kifaru sheep tarp.
Yep.
Yeah, 9 ounces, 9x5. That I think is a great call, man. On a bear hunt, like the conditions we've been describing, it's so nice to have a little tarp, set up a little, you get yourself a nice glassing location, and then if you have that tarp, it's like no matter what blows in, you're in there staying comfy. And even if you have rain gear, it's like even the best rain gear, after a while it starts to wet out. It's better to keep all that gear dry. It's like always much better to weather out a storm under a tarp that weighs just over a half a pound versus just standing there under a tree, taking it on your rain jacket.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I love that thing to just simply block wind. Like it can just do wonders.
Mm-hmm.
I usually bring a coffee kit with me for the days. Last year I bought MSR Pocket Rocket Deluxe and I got a Tokes 550 milliliter cup. The total weight of both those things is like 6 ounces. And
that's unreal.
Oh man. I went from a system that probably weighed maybe 12 to that. And it just seems like a world of difference. And so definitely not scared to take to carry that with me. Yeah, I also, like, I threw in my list a little 10-ounce mug, like the Yeti ones. One reason I like those is because, like, that little Tokes 550 mil cup, it, like, the thing, it's not paper thin, but it's, like, really thin, and it gets cold, like, instantly. So if you don't just want to feel like you have to chug your coffee or tea or whatever, having somewhat of an insulated cup has been really nice. Mm-hmm. And I would say that's, like, more of a thing that I would bring if I was hunting with other people. But definitely an insulated cup of some kind, over those little, stainless ones. Like, they just get cold so fast.
Yeah.
So it's kind of nice.
Cause I'm guessing, I don't know, I've never seen a Tokes cup, but I'm guessing it's probably a titanium.
Yeah.
Cup, pot, right?
Yeah. Yep. They also make a stainless one. I don't remember which one I have.
But yeah, they're so thin that the other problem with them is too, is like when the stuff is hot in there, that the titanium or whatever it is, stainless steel, they're like super conductors. And so yeah. You get your hot coffee in there and you put your lips to that cup and just burns you, you know?
Yeah.
It's wicked.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't feel like there's like the perfect solution yet to that, because the only time I like skip carrying the little insulated mug, and I still just use like a old school REI plastic one, if it's gonna be warm enough where I'm like, you know what, I'm not really that interested in drinking hot stuff, the only reason I have the pot and the stove is to for cooking dinners, you know, for just rehydrating meals, you know, then I'll skip it, you know. And if I want, I can drink some lukewarm water, you know, if I want to make that into tea or whatever. But
yeah.
Yeah, otherwise, if you're going to sit around and enjoy a hot drink, you might as well just bring that little insulated cup with
you. Yeah, it does make it a little nicer.
Climate air sitting pad. Got to have one of those, because you're just going to be sitting there pounding the glass.
Yeah, got to have it. Usually I use just like, I think most people use like those Therm-a-Rest little like foam pads. But I got this little climate. It's like just a blow up little air pad like seat, man.
Mm-hmm.
So nice. It cannot be that durable, but I've had it for 3 seasons now, using it kind of on and off, and it's been good for me.
Man, I had a Therm-a-Rest one of those, and it just never seemed to quite hold the air as well as I wanted to. I'm sure they've made it better, because this thing's old. This thing's at least 10, 15 years old. So nothing against Therm-a-Rest. They make great products. But yeah. I just feel like putting that much pressure on the air, you know, and it could be the difference just in our size. You know, I'm putting a lot more pressure being a 200-pound person than you are. But
yeah.
Anywho, all right. Argali game bag set, the Montana Knife Company, Stone Goat knife, and an Outdoor Edge everyday carry knife.
Yeah,
always good to have two knives, a little backup.
I think so. Yeah, and having like that, having a fixed blade and then having a replaceable blade is kind of nice. And that replaceable blade, that EDC one, I just like, that is just the knife that I carry, my pocket knife for the backcountry. So
Then you got a first aid kit and some other little essentials like fire starter, tenacious tape for fixing gear.
Pretty standard stuff, I would say.
Yeah, tourniquet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Stuff you just got to have with you at all times.
Yep.
What do you carry all that stuff in now? Do you have like is it just a Synergy bag from FHF, or do you have one of those organizer deals?
It is just a little Synergy bag. Yeah. I take that back. I had it in a Synergy bag, and then I started carrying it. One thing with some stuff like that is like, I have a lot of stuff in the little Synergy bags, and then they all look the same to anybody else that's trying to get my pack. So
yep.
If something ever happened and somebody else was trying to find my first aid kit, they'd be rummaging through some stuff. And actually Leah brought it up. She's like, if something ever happened to you, I'd be like rummaging through all this stuff, trying to figure out where the hell your first aid kit is. So I just got a little Sea to Summit, like one of those tiny little roll top dry bags. I got a red one, and I wrote first aid on it in marker.
There you go.
So that's where that stuff lives now. But
now you know, if you ever run into Jordan, she's down in the backcountry. Red package in her backpack has first aid gear in it.
Yep. Yep, it does.
All right. Total pack weight, extra clothing, and binoculars and pistol in there. No rifle. No water in there yet. 24 pounds. I feel like that's pretty good, man, especially considering all the optics that you're packing in there.
That's the heavy stuff, man. Yeah, 24 pounds. Yeah, add 3 liters of water in there, you're about 30. So I don't know, but I look back through that list and I don't know what I would take out, you know, even my coffee. It's like, you're going to save 10 ounces if you have a fuel canister, you know, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
There's some things I could skim down on, but I feel pretty good about it.
A couple thoughts on that. One, ounces add up to pounds, yeah. Pounds add up to pain. But again, being on a day hunt, you know, you have the ability to adjust every evening, maybe even midday if you happen to be back at the truck midday, it happens. And it's like I always tell everybody, and I do it myself, it's like the first hunt of the year, if it's been a while, I'm a little bit heavy. And after that first day out and you're back at camp, like you very quickly start going through there and be like, oh, you know what? I didn't make coffee today. It's the weather is not supposed to change the next 2 days, like leaving the coffee back, you know, or you know what? Never took that soft shell out of the pack. Had plenty with me with the other layers I had, you know, it's gone. And all of a sudden, like, it just seems like every hunt I go on as the hunt progresses, you're just like, okay, I think I'll just do it with one knife, you know?
Yeah.
And like, because, you know, it really does when you take a couple things here and there, drop them out. All of a sudden you went from 24 pounds down to 20, you know, maybe even under, and it makes a difference. And again, it's that fine balance, I think, between having the stuff to keep you comfortable and keep you out there, but not carrying so much that you're also wearing yourself out that could cause you to be tired and make it harder to stay out there.
All good points. Anything you'd add to the whole list?
This is how far I've gotten with my bear hunt gear list. And again, it's that special little list I was talking about where it's not all of the hunting stuff that Jordan just talked about, but these are specifically small. They don't have to be small, I guess, but just specific items that I feel like I would really gain an advantage by having these with me on a bear hunt. Okay. Number one, I already talked about it, as a book, but I wrote down reading materials, upload to phone. It's like these days, it's very easy to upload a book to a phone. So, or you could probably even, you know, download your favorite magazine. So you don't have to be carrying the weight of an extra book. You've got reading material in there. I have sunflower seeds on there. And when Jordan had a list of snacks, I just breezed over it.
Yeah.
But sunflower seeds are, it's not even, I mean, sure, you get some salt out of it. Maybe there's a few calories too, but it's one of those things. It should be right there. I should have chewing gum on there too. But I feel like on these bear hunts, long days, and there's comes a time where everybody's going to fight a little bit of boredom, and you can bust out a bag of sunflower seeds and all of a sudden everybody's, you know, spitting shells around and getting some salt in, and nice way to pass, even if it's just, you know, 20, 30 minutes, it gets you closer to the magic hour. Umbrella, you know, I don't know if I would go umbrella and tarp probably, but it's a thought. These days you can get some incredibly light umbrellas. And again, even with nice rain gear, man, if you're like really going to experience a heavy deluge, like pop that thing up and you can keep, you know, it's basically like just having a little mini tarp all of a sudden, boom, just, you know, in a second popped up, keeping your gear dry. You know, a lot of times we have cameras and stuff with us. You can pop that up and still be working with something and getting it tucked away. Umbrella could be cool. And then a predator call, you know, the dying jackrabbit, whatever you want to call it, you know, it's just that kind of standard predator call. If you have a bear that, you know, goes into the timber on you, you're within range and you're thinking, man, it'd be sure nice if I could maybe get him back out. Like a predator call can get that bear to stick its nose back out of the timber and give you another opportunity for a shot.
Man, I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Now, I'm not blowing on one of those things in grizz country.
Yeah.
But if I know there's not a grizz, or at least I think there's not a grizz within, you know, 50, 100 miles, I like rocking the predator call.
Sweet. That rounds me out.
Nice list. I hope you get a bear. Have you killed a bear before?
I've killed one bear.
One bear.
And,
I've yet to get one.
Did you? You went with Clay a couple years ago, yeah?
Yep. Clay put me on a nice one, and I did not make a good shot. He was going to disappear in the canyon bottom, and, you know, I took a strong quarter and two shot, and I think I just missed him a little bit right. I mean, he's still, you can watch, there's a video of it. You can watch Clay and I go bear hunting, and you can see I hit him, but I think I pretty much, like, shot through his left leg. But I don't think I entered, you know, the body cavity. Kind of like, he definitely felt it. He picks up his leg, runs off, but, zero to no blood. You know, we did everything we could, but, anyways, and then, yeah, I spent a solid 5-6 days hunting last year too for a bear. Saw a bunch of bears. I think we saw like 9 bears, but, just not the one.
Nice.
You know, just not a mature boar. So,
cool.
Yeah, I'm excited to go this spring too. I'm going out with Corey Calkins. I like hunting with these ex-hunting guides, especially when you get to hunt in the state they used to guide in, because they usually have a couple spots and a couple tricks up their sleeve.
Some intel. Yeah, it never hurts.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I'm excited to get after it and give a hell in a new area.
Sweet, sweet.
Cool.
All right, well, for you guys listening at home, remember to participate in the Gear Talk podcast. By you can email to geartalk@themeteor.com. You can go to the episodes page, which is at themeteor.com. Go under podcast, find Gear Talk, find this particular episode or whatever episode you want to comment on. You can listen to the episodes there as well, but there's a comment thread there. And Jordan and I are on there answering questions, just being part of the conversation and getting ideas for new episodes. So please, if you can, participate. And obviously you can DM us on the old Instagram too. Easy to find. Jordan, you're just, I always forget, just Jordan Bud, right?
Yeah, Jordan.Bud.
Jordan.Bud. I'm Giannis.Poutelis. And this is Gear Talk Podcast from Meteor. Thanks for listening.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right, join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's gonna be there. Phil the engineer's gonna be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the the Wilma Theater in Missoula, May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington, May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon, and May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.